Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, this is the Macko and Cause podcast, and I got a question for you. Do you feel good about your lawyer? I bet you don't. I bet many of you don't even have a lawyer. Shame on you, because at some point you're going to. And if you need a lawyer, the lawyer for this podcast, our sponsor, is Jeff Pollock. If you need to find him, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. It's a boutique a boutique lawyer who will serve all your needs. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good, Matt. I like how you said, oh, I was going to say winery when you actually did say winery. So here's my thought. If you can afford your own lawyer, like someone who works just for you, you are rich. If you can afford your own doctor who works just for you, you are wealthy.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I want a team of doctors who are... Okay, this is dark and evil, and I don't mean this, but they're harvesting the blood from the young so that I can live just a little bit longer.
isn't that the Hillary Clinton thing?
What?
That's the QAnon conspiracy.
Oh, right.
Hillary and the Davos group generally drink the blood or the stem cells of the young so that they stay eternally youthful and evil.
Okay. I gotta say,
Matt, like there's a lot of conspiracies out there that I don't necessarily agree with, but you could see how it might be possible. I don't see how anyone looks at that one and says, yeah, that sounds right.
And also, if you're going to do it, you've got to look like I'm going to be really shallow now, but Paul Rudd, you know, I'm going to say he looks the same as he did 25 years ago. He's someone I'm looking at. Yeah.
Do you think Paul Rudd is secretly running the Western world?
I'm going to say this right now, Bob. I 100% guarantee that Paul Rudd is drinking the blood and stem cells of the youth to keep himself young. I 100% believe that. And also, Jeff Pollock, I'm going to need you soon. There's lawsuits coming my way.
True. From Paul Rudd, who's got probably his own doctors even.
Exactly. His own evil doctors. Damn you, Paul Rudd.
You know, who would have thought that fresh-faced kid from Halloween 5 would turn out to be such an evil dictator?
Oh, that is a great pull by you, Bob. It is such a horrible movie. But yes, Paul Rudd. And he's not like a bit part in it. He's not like Kevin Bacon in the first Friday the 13th, which is actually a good movie, who gets killed early. He's in the whole damn film.
That is so true. So we're going a little bit early today because you got to take Amy to work, right? So... it's pre 9 a.m. There's tons to get to. Where do you want to start?
I want to start on this past weekend. I forgot to wish you happy Father's Day, though Charlotte seems to enjoy making fun of Uncle Matt, who may or may not enjoy a glass of wine. How was Father's Day?
Charlotte's not adverse to making fun of dear old dad either. It was lovely. We had a great day. It was nice just to hang out with everyone. We went up to my in-laws' place and, you know, the family got around a table outside and we played Clue. And it was so wholesome and awesome and I loved it. It's funny, though. I laughed to my wife that I'm going to tell the story on the pod and it's going to sound way worse than it really is. It's going to make her look terrible, but it actually wasn't terrible. So ask me what I got for Father's Day.
Hey, Bob, what did you get for Father's Day?
My wife said, grab your credit card, drove me to Walmart, and said, go in and get yourself some socks.
That's horrible.
I think it's great. We've been laughing about how, for some reason during COVID, we've lost a sock a week. And we're just got no socks. Like, nobody can understand what happened. We've been locked in here for 15 months, and the house has no socks. So we agreed the only thing anybody wants for a gift... until we've replenished the store, is socks.
Okay, let's stick with socks for a second, because I had to throw out a pair yesterday. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, once you get a tiny hole in And it's always the big toe. It's always at the big toe. You have to throw them out because all you feel is that little tiny hole in your sock, and it ruins the whole thing.
It is true. It's like a stone in the shoe, but in a gentler way. But that's the key to keeping your socks alive, though. You have to learn how to darn them.
What does that mean? I'm going to just say this right now. I don't know what that means.
Well, it just means, like, stitch up the hole.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why it's called darning. It seems kind of a specific thing to have its own word. I don't know if it's important enough to have its own word, but, like Father McKenzie and Eleanor Rigby with the Beatles, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care?
No one. Anyway, I'm not going to insult Paul and John by singing. Okay, so that was your Father's Day. You had a great time, and you got socks. How was the line at Walmart?
Walmart was great. We went through, my daughter and I, we grabbed a shopping cart, and it was kind of like we were on a game show. We're like, this is it. It's Father's Day. We're just getting whatever the hell we want, which, of course, we didn't really. But that was the idea, was let's just throw things in the cart that make us happy. So I got a teddy bear that says love you on it, which is on my desk now forever. And what else did I get? I got some undershirts, some Gatorade. Yeah, just all the good stuff.
Yeah. Sounds like you had a $20 gift certificate to a 7-Eleven.
Man, I remember back when I used to be in a band. You'd be surprised how much shopping you can do at a 7-Eleven when you have to.
Or you know what you just got? You got the deadbeat dad birthday gift. Dad shows up last minute and went to the gas station. Here you go, son. Some Gatorade and undershirts. Happy birthday. I'll see you in 11 months. I'm going back to Central Florida.
All I know is that I'm wearing my undershirt. My wife's got my socks on. The kid's happy. Everything good at Casa Makowitz. So let's talk about, I want to talk about Masai. Can we start with basketball and can we talk Masai?
Yeah.
Because tonight is the draft lottery and this one actually matters. It's been a while since we've been glued. They've been picking in the teens or the 20s for a while now, but after last year, they've got a 31% chance, I believe, of winding up in the top four. And that could be a franchise-altering thing if it happens. And so I'm glued to it tonight, and I'm sure you are too, correct?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's the most important thing. I haven't thought about this. Ooh, I wonder if I could talk about this on air. I'm only on for an hour because of Euro, but is this the... I mean, I guess this is the biggest night since Game 7 against Montreal in the last while.
Oh, well, it's 1,000,000%. I would argue in Toronto sports, it's the biggest night since, let's take the Leafs out of it because they're their own category. But for the Raptors, this is the biggest night since Game 6 against Golden State.
100%.
I would argue it's even bigger than Game 7 against the Celtics because they weren't going to win a championship that year. But this is franchise altering if they get the right guy. And I'm not a draft expert by any stretch, but I'm one of those obsessives that reads every profile and every guy who could be on the team. So I'll just say right now, Jalen Green would look nice. But anyway, if they get the right guy, the organization changes. And if they really get the right guy, they're back into the elite. Maybe not next year, but in a year or two down the road. This is huge tonight. So here's my question for you, Matt, because it's pretty pointless for us to speculate who the right guy would be for the team, but
we're not the right brains for that conversation.
No, even combined into one brain, we're still not the right person. But why is Masai not making the pick? Why is Masai not representing the team? Why is Fred out there? I keep seeing all these tweets. Oh, I love the story that Freddie, the undrafted player, is repping the team tonight. That's beautiful. It's not beautiful. You've got a team president that we desperately need back, who's unsigned right now, and he's not there on the most important night the Raptors have had in a long time. That's not good.
Holy shit, you're right. Oh, my God. Thanks, Bob. I'm stealing all of this for the show today. Tune in at 2 o'clock when literally it's just going to be repurposed Bob Makowitz thoughts. You're right. And you know what? I got sucked into it too. I thought it was awesome. Like, hey, there's bet on yourself guy. There's guy who didn't get drafted. There's this great shining beacon example of what the Raptors are about development. And it's about him and his hard work and his effort and his sacrifice. You're right. Where's Masai?
If he was about ready to sign, wouldn't today be a great day to announce that?
Yeah, on set, instead of the bad hacky jokes that'll be told by uncomfortable GMs and owners and the kids of owners. Yes.
So I'm very unhappy about this. I'm not angry or upset. Maybe nervous is a better word than unhappy. Well, I guess those two things can go together. They're pretty close. But I just don't want to see any more takes about the glory of Freddie finding himself in this position, because Freddie might not, you know, Freddie might have Bobby Webster as a team president soon. Not really, and but you know what I mean.
Yeah, and it's nothing to get, listen, everyone, Webster, this is a really good organization, but Masai's the Jenga piece. Not the Jenga piece at the top that the cowards take, the Jenga piece at the bottom that the drunk person takes, even though it's the second term and you don't need turn and you don't need to take out that second piece. You're feeling good and tipsy. That's Masai Ujiri, that bottom piece.
We'll never know what conversations happened between the team and the NBA when it was determined that they had to play in Tampa. We'll never know. But whatever it was, clearly has unhinged Masai, because even during his season wrap-up, he talked about, with regards to himself, what he needs to see. It wasn't railing against the owners. He loves the owners. It wasn't railing against the city. He loves the city and the fans. It was the relationship between the Raptors and the NBA. And I don't know about you, but I have never heard a team executive in the middle of a contract negotiation say, my biggest concern is how the NBA, as a league, views this team. And so when he's not out there today and he's kind of thrown out this, I feel like he's obviously an extremely intelligent person and probably a great poker player when he needs to be. So I can't imagine that was an accident, that somebody would mention something so out of the ordinary and deliberate. And whatever it is, I don't know if it can be papered over with money, but it's possible that he's just sitting there and waiting to see what offers come up. That's why we don't know anything. And after this, I feel like he's gone.
So you're now on the Masai Ujiri's leaving Toronto side of things.
I thought, you know, I got sucked into the narrative, which was the way I got sucked in, you know, with the Kawhi thing, when everyone was like, oh, it's 90%, he's coming back here. And you're just desperate for any information. And as soon as you hear good information, it's confirmation bias. This is what I want to hear, so it must be true. No, I think that the evidence would suggest that unless something really big is happening behind the scenes, and considering how far down the road they are with, you know, I would think that their player workouts start next week. You got to have your executive in place. That's a huge decision. What if they do wind up with the third or fourth pick? Who you pick could change your franchise's, trajectory for 10 years. This is a massive time coming up.
Okay. Some pushbacks and some things by what you said.
Okay.
The most positive about why he's staying is during that press conference, where you're right, he was very critical of the NBA. And I wonder if any of that is still residue about Adam Silver initially not fully supporting Masai after that stupid fucking cop in Golden State.
Ooh, that's a great point. That's a great point.
So that's my first thought. Masai often used the word we when talking in that press conference. Now, maybe that is me with my bias, confirmation bias. Then my next thought is, I wonder if Masai's waiting to see where the Raptors land with this pick. I wonder if that has any impact on if he's going to stay or go.
That's a great point. I don't know if it would be that fine a point, but if they could get a Cade Cunningham, or even if you thought one of the other three or four best players had superstar potential, he's smart enough to know. He authored the playbook in a lot of ways. If you don't get the superstar, you're in purgatory. They don't have it. I'm sure they're looking at Pascal and thinking he'll bounce back. He'll be a good player. The contract won't seem so ridiculous after he bounces back, but he'll never be that guy. And maybe he thinks they can draft that guy, which more, you know, if the recent NBA history has shown, you don't have to have those top picks if you happen to have good luck, but it helps.
And also remember with Pascal Siakam, there's also the injury So we don't know, like, that's going to, again, slow down his progress. He's going to be out for a while. But, you know, Devin Booker went 13th overall, and now he looks like he's going to be the, you know, he's going to be one of the big stars of the game. It's really, and God, has he played well? Wow. Donovan Mitchell went 13th. So you're right. It's not necessarily maybe about getting one of the top three picks, but it certainly helps.
And if he has a strong belief that the team can be fixed in the near term, maybe that's a point. With the league's expansion into Africa, I got to believe that he wants to play a part in that, maybe as an owner. Here I am thinking for him, but if I was him, God, if I was him, that'd be amazing. But I think, like, where else do you go when you've ruled the executive roost? The only spot left is ownership. And that would make some sense. But you could stay in Toronto until that gets organized, then leave to go and own a team.
Well, it just depends where he gets the most kicks out of the competition. I mean, look at someone like Pat Riley. Pat Riley is still doing everything he can to try to build the Heat. And, you know, there are the executives and coaches, the Popoviches that have been around for ages, who have won more than one. You know, I mean, I'm just trying to think of a reason for him not to fully invest himself right now in, you know, in the NBA expansion into Africa, because that's always going to be there. You know, he could step in, and he'll always have Giants of Africa. He can always step into any of those other jobs, whatever he wants, and would be one of the top people there.
There was speculation, and I kind of bought into it, that he would leave basketball before he would move up in basketball, because the opportunities were just bigger out there. That this was the whole Washington Wizards talk, that he would want to go to Washington because he's creating more power relationships there, including the Obamas, and you're in the center of global politics. And, you know, for a guy who's as intelligent and ambitious as him, if you want to make a ton of money, go to LA or New York. If you want to be influential, you can add Washington to the list. I got a gold, silver, bronze for you, and I got to pick them. So let's do the pick 'em first, and then we'll get to the gold, silver, bronze after that. Okay, ready?
Done and done. By the way, one quick evil thought. Yeah. Part of me was going, well, if Trump wins, at least that would dissuade Masai from going to Washington. So there's that.
I thought about it too. It wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to pull for him, but it was a consideration. Okay, pick 'em. More likely to be a Raptor when the season starts up in 2021 again, Masai Ujiri or Kyle Lowry?
Masai Ujiri. The Lakers, Philly, Miami, there's all these teams that are like, oh, yeah, we kind of screwed up by overvaluing our young guys and not going to get Kyle Lowry.
I agree with you. I think they're probably both gone, but it feels like Kyle is gone.
Yeah.
So I wrote just a quick list here. The Sixers needed him. The Clippers needed him. The Lakers needed him. The Mavericks needed him. And the Heat needed him. Nobody went out and made that deal. And, you know, the Clippers obviously are still in the mix now. But it's pretty clear that right now, especially with Kawhi, they could use him. And, you know, Sid Sixero sent out a tweet that I thought was bang on, even though I didn't agree with the dollar figure. But he's like, none of these teams traded for Kyle, and that may have raised his value by $50 million. I don't know if it's $50 million, but there's got to be a lot of disappointed teams out there that thought, like, seriously, Talen Horton Tucker, you're the Lakers, and the Talen Horton Tucker was the deal breaker?
It's so short-sighted. And by the way, that $50 million, I feel that's just Sid. I'll throw that number out. That'll get, you know, that'll raise the eyebrows. But think about this, Bob. How much better would Philly have been if Ben Simmons didn't have to be the ball handler? Because he's a useless ball handler, because he can't shoot. He's afraid to shoot. Like, when people look at Joel Embiid and they see, I think he had 16 turnovers in the last two games. Well, that's what's going to happen when you ask your 7'1" center to be the playmaker, which was ridiculous. If you put Kyle Lowry there, it takes more of the pressure off of Simmons. You can just give him 100 lobs, and Lowry can give you those lobs. Like, Lowry would have unlocked so much more for that offense, which is so, so flawed.
If they had made that deal, then disappointed Trae Young is a meme today. But yes, they did not make that deal. And Daryl Morey, the genius, It's I couldn't agree more. It's so short-sighted. They don't have cap space this offseason, unless you could probably do a sign and trade. But, you know, who do you take back? Like, who wants Tobias Harris right now at $30 million, you know? I don't know exactly how they, like, everyone's like, oh, you know, Philly and this and that and the other thing. I don't see that one happening. I think it's the Heat, don't you think?
Well, I mean, in terms of like salary cap, I'm not smart enough. There's always a way you get a third team involved and suddenly a deal happens where you didn't expect it. But the Heat make a lot of sense. But just on Ben Simmons for a quick second, this was a guy that Philly, you know, I don't know how close it came, but there was going to be a trade for Ben Simmons for James Harden. Now, who the hell is trading for Ben Simmons? Like, and it's not that he can't be reclamated, but holy Lord, I like the stock of a young all-star, and not because of injury. I haven't seen that precipitous drop as much as I've seen with Ben Simmons.
It's a great point, and I love how you say that. It is a precipitous drop. I don't know that I've been as shocked by a single play as I have been by Ben Simmons passing up a dunk to dish off to Matisse Thybulle for a layup. Mm-hmm. An uncontested dunk for a contested layup. It was just, you know, you can blame Doc Rivers for not yanking him at that point, because it's clearly he's saying, I shouldn't be out here. I'm not going to play. Not like he's pouting, but it's just, it's too much for him. I guess when you're paying a guy, what is it, $177 million or whatever, there's pressure to leave him in there. But I can't remember a time when a team needed to pull its superstar as desperately as the Sixers did. Shocking. Shocking.
When you think of how offense is played now, and so much of it's about guards and wings, and your quote-unquote second-best player, your second-highest-paid player, and this player takes a total of three shots in the fourth quarter in that seven-game series against Atlanta, and no shots in the fourth quarter in the final four games. We can focus on the free throws, and we should. He was historically bad. That's not hyperbole. He was historically bad. But the fact that he was afraid to shoot the ball, or for all the Ben Simmons truthers, and wow, are they they're a passionate group. The team didn't give him the ball. Ask yourself, why didn't the team give him the ball? You can't have your second best player afraid to shoot.
It wasn't just that he was afraid to shoot, Matt. He was afraid to go to the line.
Yep.
He was afraid to dunk it because if he got fouled, he would have to go to the line. And this is beyond the yips. You know, Markel Fultz had the yips. Lots of players get them. You know, I bet you they have them more often than we think we do, and they just know how to deal with it. But this was a full-on collapse. I ordinarily would have a lot of sympathy for somebody in that situation, but I have no sympathy right now, because here's a guy who has been encouraged to work on any number of facets of his game, and he defiantly has said, no, I'm not going to do that. And, you know, I did a bit of reading into this because I found it fascinating. And what comes back time and time again is he doesn't want to be told what to do. He doesn't want to do something that maybe is going to make him less cool out there. These are the things that people keep throwing out that are familiar with the situation. What I don't hear is anything other than personal reasons why this guy's not working on his game. And I don't mean personal reasons like he's sensitive or this or that. I mean, just sort of like number one pick, making a ton of dough, go F yourselves. I'll do it the way I want. And so I don't have a ton of sympathy for this guy. And here's the other thing that makes me nervous about this. You know, we talk about trade value. It's one thing if he has a meltdown series, like Rudy Gobert had a meltdown series, but I don't think people feel he's over. Ben Simmons may not be coachable. So if he's not coachable and he's got a problem like this, then he's not fixable.
It's crazy. You're right. It was stunning to watch. Like, you would watch I would watch those games and I would walk up to my TV and I would just stare at Ben Simmons. And he looked so irrelevant. He was just a guy on the court. Someone tweeted out, Ben Simmons plays the way you do as a kid when your mom walks in the room and you want to pretend like you're busy. So you pretend like you're doing things so you don't have to be asked to do a chore.
God, that is such a great tweet. You know how, like, when you're a kid and you're playing soccer and you're no good and everybody knows it, so they don't kick the ball and you're just kind of running around?
Yep.
That's what he looked like to me. He looked like Bob Mackwich playing soccer as a 10-year-old when everyone figured out he's a turnover. Don't let him touch it.
Or the key when you were in the newsroom at TSN, if you don't want to have, if you didn't want to be asked to do anything, get three or four tapes, those, the big Betamax or whatever tapes, and just walk with purpose and look a little bit angry, and no, and everyone will go, oh, they're really busy. I better ask someone else to shot list this game. You know, that's another little trick you could do.
I know that one, and I love that one. And it reminded me of how when I used to be on the job site, the guy with the most keys is the guy in charge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If your belt is so filled with keys, like your keychain is bursting at the seams, you must be very important.
Bob, if you're the first person murdered by Magneto when he appears on your construction site, you must be the boss.
That's such a nerdy reference, but I'm here for it. Okay, I've got my gold, silver, bronze. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Rank these in terms of gold, silver, bronze. Most likely to make another All-NBA team in his career. Pascal Siakam, Rudy Gobert, Ben Simmons.
Oh, my God, Bob. What are you doing here? An All-NBA team.
So it's not just even being an All-Star, but all of these guys have been considered in the top 15 players of the in the league at some point in time.
Yeah. Okay. Shit.
And by the way, we could fairly say none of them will make an All-NBA team at this
point. No, but I'm not going Bob McKenzie on you.
You know, Bob's not going to give you an answer when he gives us that. Well.
All right. At number three, I'm going to go Siakam because he's only done it once. He's injured again. He's not going to be ready for the start of the season. So this is going to be another year without any of the traditional training camp development, stuff like that. So I'm going to put him at bronze. I will put Ben Simmons at, I'm going to do Ben Simmons at silver. And here's why, because those all NBA teams, it's based on what you do in the regular season, and Ben Simmons' skill set can work in the regular season because teams can't, you know, they don't have as much time to game plan against you. So there's a lot of Tuesday nights against Sacramento and Orlando when you can score 20 points with lobs and stuff. And then I'll give gold to Rudy Gobert, who is, you know, in a good situation with a good team around him. And just by osmosis, he could do enough good things to make a all-NBA team.
I have exactly the same list, and for a lot of the reasons. And I would add one more thing to Rudy Gobert, which is, unless he's like the Clippers annihilated him because they went small ball.
Yep.
But not every team has the ability to do what the Clippers did. So that could be a problem in the playoffs when you inevitably run into a team with that capability. But to your point about the regular season, most NBA teams are not that talented. Most NBA teams are not that versatile roster wise. So he's still, you know, what is it, four in a row defensive players of the year? Like, I just don't see the drop-off being that big. And he's got good players around him. You know what's interesting about this, though? Think about everything we just said about Ben Simmons. And we still think his future is brighter than Pascal Siakam's.
He's a year or so, yeah, right. He's a year or so younger. Also, more of the traditional path, star in college, number one overall pick. Like, he's followed the arc, the normal arc. Like, the Siakam story is a wonderful one and is a legitimate story of perseverance and hard work. The problem is there's less precedent. So in the end, if you're just betting on what's going to work, you're going to bet on the more familiar path.
It's really well said. And you and I are totally in sync on this. I think Ben Simmons will be fixable. I don't know if Doc Rivers is the guy to do it. He may just need a fresh start. I don't see how he could go back to Philadelphia. They hate him 10 times as much as Toronto Maple Leafs fans feel about Mitch Marner right now. They're not going to let it go. The only thing that could redeem him is a title. I don't know if it's capable there. Like, Joel Embiid, clearly, if he has anything to say about it, he didn't exactly defend him. He threw him under the bus in his post-game press availability. He's got to go. And to your point about trade value, It reminds me a bit of Kemba Walker in the Celtics, where a couple years ago they were going to win a title because they got Kemba Walker. Now they traded him for Al Horford and they had to sweeten it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. But at least with that one, Kemba has lots and lots of injuries and is older. Ben Simmons is still only 25 and healthy. Usually the big drop in value is either age or injuries, and usually both. Ben doesn't have either of those.
It's a, you know, you made a really great point about the regular season. We see this in the NHL playoffs too, is some teams and some players are just, they're perfect for the regular season and you get sucked in. But when the nature of the game changes, you either have to be flexible enough to change with it or just simply better at what the playoffs require. What I'm, you know, we've talked about this in a lot of different ways over the years, but the playoffs and the regular season are just different. And that pro sports in North America have a regular season problem. What's good in the regular season doesn't translate. There's way too many games. Players are getting injured. You know, the star players are out, so your marquee value drops. Because of the money, it will never be fixed. They will add more before they take any away. But increasingly, I find it harder and harder to care about the regular season.
Yeah, and it's... Also, in this market, it's going to be so hard to care about the Leafs' regular season. And you're right. Part of this just comes down to games. And we've now seen fewer games. Games mean more and all that. We know it. You're right. And it's we love to go, well, you know, the owners, the greedy owners aren't gonna take less games. Well, neither are the players. Right. They'd have to take less money as well. You know, so unless you somehow change the financial model where the TV money, even if the TV money is still the same, there's still less money at the gate for at stadium. So everyone would have to be okay taking a cut.
Any other basketball thoughts? Suns, Clippers. There's a lot of great games going on right now. Do you want to talk about the Hawks? Anything else?
Here's what. The one other thing I want to talk about is I've never liked Kevin Durant more than I have in this playoff series.
It must be so weird for you in that Kevin Durant hating brain of yours, because he really was heroic in the last series.
Well, you used the right word there, Bob. Heroic. And actually, it made all the sense. It was never that I hated Durant the person. I always hated Durant the decisions he made. Durant, when he started out in OKC, growing to those young guys, winning the MVP in tears with his mom, I love that version. Then he goes to Golden State, and I can't stand him. What did we see with the Nets? It was him doing a lot of it on his own. He was incredible, playing every minute. You couldn't help but be enraptured in it. And here's the thing, the dirty little secret. The best thing that could have happened to the NBA was those injuries for two reasons. One, it made Durant into a hero and must watch. Two, if the Brooklyn Nets were 100% healthy, they win the title. Not only do they win the title, they probably go 16-3 in the playoffs, and it's boring as shit. Because compelling, bye-bye if Harden and Kyrie were fully healthy. So in some ways, it was better for the NBA, but I loved seeing what Durant did. And the NBA, listen, you got to find a way to break up that big three. Break up that monopoly, baby. Let one of them stay there. And then it's easier to root for.
Is this like antitrust against Amazon or Facebook? Yes. Is this like divesting yourself of Instagram if you're Facebook?
Hell yeah. That's 100% what it is.
Oh my God. That's so brilliant, Matt. NBA antitrust. See, we don't need it this year, though, because of the narrative. Because if those three are healthy again next year, then it will be the team that we didn't get to see. And Kevin Durant will have earned it Kevin Durant this year was like Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life. You know, he was fighting the Battle of Bedford Falls. Everyone else took off. He was left holding the bag. He did his best. You know, Clarence the Angel has to come down and say, here's your Harden and Kyrie back. It's a wonderful life.
Ah, I love what you did there, Bob. And actually, my hair, the hair on my arm is raising. And whenever you talk about It's a Wonderful Life, here's the difference, Bob. If those guys are healthy next year, they win the title. Next year, Kevin Durant will be a champion, but he won't be a hero. He was heroic this year. He's not going to be a hero winning it if he wins it next year with those guys healthy.
That's true, but I think. at the very least, will see it differently than if they won this year. In the same way that when the Heat lost to the Mavs, it made when they finally did win not feel like this Thanos-like inevitability where they snapped their fingers and got their first of seven championships, as Chris Bosh predicted. They had to overcome something. I disagree with you about the hero stuff, because the hero has to overcome obstacles in the hero's journey. And Kevin Durant, to your point, has not had that many because he just finds situations that are good for him. But in this one, he failed. He failed even though he gave it his all. He did fail. They didn't win. He failed.
They were the better team. He's better than anyone out there on that court. They were the better team.
But they didn't win. They didn't win. And in the end, that's all that really matters.
To me, Durant is, no matter what happens, most likely he's the big, I mean, we'll see what happens, Chris Paul and stuff like that. But the most heroic person of these playoffs is going to be Durant. And if he wins it next year, it will be obviously about individual excellence at the highest level. And it'll be all of that. But from the storytelling stuff that we love about sports, it's not heroic. The example I always give, that Nets team with those three guys healthy, them winning the title would be like if Luke Skywalker was given an X-Wing and the blueprints to the Death Star and said, here, kid, fly up there, take a shot, then go home. Aunt Beru is cooking stew, and let's roll the credits 4 minutes in.
Would have been a lot easier. Okay, yeah. So let's just agree with this. There are two kinds of heroism in sports. There's heroism in victory, and then there's heroism in defeat. And we tend to romanticize heroism in defeat even more because we believe there's a higher ideological calling behind it. Usually when there's heroism in defeat, it's because you've lived up to some platonic ideal that we attribute to sports. Courage, endurance, you know, whatever. And winning is just winning. You know, we live in a capitalist society and people like winning. So your victory is more meaningful ultimately. Your victory is the one. Like, if there's a sports movie and it's heroism and victory, you're Air Bud. And if you lose, then you're the first Rocky. You can't win an Oscar in a sports movie unless your hero loses at the end, but find something more.
That's true. But let me ask you this, Bob. Which title does LeBron remember the most? Which is the one that stands out the most?
Oh, it's Cleveland.
Now, on that Cleveland team, by the way, he had Kyrie, he had Kevin Love, but he had to face an incredibly difficult obstacle. So for the Brooklyn Nets next year, and again, I'm just projecting, who knows what it's going to look like. But if you don't have an impressive obstacle to overcome, then it's not heroic. It doesn't mean you're not athletically excellent or the best at your game, but it's just not as heroic without that. You need the obstacle. That's where the heroism comes.
I agree. The quality of your hero is defined by the quality of your villain.
Yes.
Well, we need the East to have a good villain again, and the Nets will be that again next year. Unless Lowry goes to Philly, and then it'll be Philly.
Could be. I'm no problem with, like, if Kyrie decided to retire to work on his slam poetry, and Harden was back... Thank you.
Oh, man.
If
that was good. Thank you.
If it was Harden and Durant, and then you build the team around, and they win the title, then it is both heroic and athletic excellence. So, you know, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with the Durant winning it. And again, this is through my prism. I recognize how selfish I am in all of this, but there just has to be obstacles.
Empty space. I stand at the free throw line.
I am not an athlete. I am a artist. National basketball artiste. Artist. I test you. I don't artest you. I test you. Kyrie.
Oh, man. You know, if we don't stop now, the next 14 minutes are going to be you and I doing Kyrie's slam poetry.
Oh, my God. It's so true.
Oh, man. This is when I wish we were back on the air, just so we could give, like, the program director and aneurysm as we spiral down one of our rabbit holes.
Oh, by the way, speaking of the old show, Keith Bauer, who produces Overdrive, he sent me a link. He's like one of the old Austin Matthews minutes. I completely forgot about the Austin Matthews minute.
I totally forgot about that. That's a great bit. So what did we do? We just like talked about him for a minute.
Well, yeah, we had the it was the dramatic promo. What is he doing? What's he wearing? What's his birthday? You know,
that's a good bit. Well, that's good. It's, you know what, Matt? Honestly, the problem with our show was that, well, there was a lot of things that happened. But the fact was AM radio only had money to pay for two shows, and they were Overdrive and the morning show. And that's it.
And at the time, Bell was doing massive cutbacks across Canada. But we had the Brett Laurie, you know, the Brett Laurie stuff. Yeah,
reading Brett Laurie's tweets. God, that was funny. With the Skrillex music underneath it.
Yeah, which got me blocked. We had hip-hop leaderboard updates whenever there was a golf major.
Yeah, it was especially the Masters. Mm-hmm. I still remember you talking about Matty Kuchar.
Cuckoo Coochie or Kevin Na? No, like Kevin Ya.
So ridiculous.
So dumb.
So dumb. As we're wrapping it to Snoop Beds.
Yep.
Well, you know, I guess that's what the pod is for. You know, I would like at some point, just once, for you and I to do another show. I don't know what that would look like, but it would be nice just to get out there, you and I, and just throw the ball around again.
I will say this. I never give up hope for it because I live this weird leaf in the river life where, you know, one moment I'm hanging out, then I'm shooting a commercial or someone flew me to Spain because of the wine podcast. And, you know, you're connected and super talented. I somehow know some people and have a bit of talent. I feel at some point, I hope at some point it happens.
My secret is like the Hulk and Mark Ruffalo. I'm always angry. Mm. So
yeah,
I'm too angry to die, which means we have time. By the way, I was thinking, wouldn't it be crazy if Lowry went to the Knicks? He'd actually be really good on that team. And
that would make sense.
It would make so much sense. They're really good defensively, but they were 22nd in offensive efficiency. And they have cap space. It would make a ton of sense for him to go there. And it would be funny because he almost got dealt to New York. And it was the Knicks that said no back in the day. And that's what set up Toronto's championship run. So in some bizarre form of poetic symmetry, imagine if he went to the Knicks and the deal from whatever it was 7 years ago or 8 years ago actually finally got done.
The other side, I feel kind of bad for him because I know they had that good year. But Julius Randle got a little bit exposed. They lost in five to, now we're learning, a very good Atlanta team. The inevitability feels like Miami or Philly. It just feels inevitable for Lowry for some one of those two places.
I think I'm with you there. The one thing the Knicks have is Thibodeau. And where you have a good coach, you have hope, especially if you can get players who have buy-in. You know, there's a couple things that happen in the sports world. This is almost like a nod to the gods kind of thing. I don't know if we need to, like, discuss this if you don't want to or we don't want to, but I thought there were two interesting stories that popped up yesterday. Carl Nassib and the first openly gay player in the NFL. That was great to see. I watched his Instagram video, and, man, he really projected a lot of humanity and confidence. He seemed really impressive.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was great. Becky Hammond.
Being one of the finals for maybe the job of the Spurs.
Well, she's definitely in contention, according to all the reporting. And that's huge. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about Becky Hammond. And, you know, she's already, like, broken the barrier in the sense that I guess it was the end of last year. Popovich got tossed and she took over the team. So there has been a female head coach on the sidelines, but it's a bit like Kim Campbell and the first female prime minister. Like, it sort of happened, but nobody really thinks of it that way. Like, you really need somebody who can take over and make something theirs, you know? And I don't know if she's a good coach or not. But, man, I hope that happens. It would be so interesting to see just how the league and the media would respond.
I agree. And I think the media, listen, there's going to be 3% that's going to bitch and complain and write about affirmative action and wokeness and all of that. But the majority are going to be for it. The majority are like, okay, let's see what you got. This is fascinating and different. It's also happening somewhere that credibility is already there. It's happening in San Antonio. If this was happening in Sacramento, maybe she wouldn't get as much of the benefit of the doubt. But it's happening. It's like Greg Popovich saying, yes, we should do this. So I think for the most part, I don't think there'd be much of an issue.
Yeah. You know, the thing that like I hear all the time from people is that when you are representing a community that tends to be underrepresented, when you get a chance, there's a lot of pressure on you not to fail because the narrative tends to be, we tried it, it didn't work. Right. So the idea of Becky Hammon got the job and then somehow it didn't work, it would be not just proof that she didn't work, but proof that you can't have a female head coach. And
all I would say to that is, look at Mike Budenholzer. That guy shouldn't be a coach.
Well, I think this is one of the great points. Like, take, you know, any concepts of wokeness out of it. I think one of the points that needs to be heard loud and clear is that there's a lot of dicks out there who get a lot of chances.
Yeah, there's a lot of shitty male coaches. I mean, trust me. Patino is still working in some college you've never heard of before. Yeah,
exactly. I think it's Siena or something like that. What? Hey, by the way, just as an aside, does Gareth Wheeler and Mike Budenholzer have a bit of a separated at birth going on?
No.
You don't think Budenholzer looks like Wheels?
I think they have similar facial hair.
Yeah, maybe. I got to take a closer look. But it jumped out at me the other day because when they stopped doing their mask vaccine theater, wearing the masks on the sideline, and he pulled it down to yell at the ref, I was like, holy shnikes, it's Wheels.
Give it another look. I think it's the facial hair, and hopefully not, because Budenholzer, I wouldn't trust that guy to change my tires.
Well, he's going to win a title.
Let's wait and see. They really weren't that impressive against the Nets. And getting back and I keep forgetting his last name, Carl Nassib. Thank you. The interesting thing about here is this is the highest profile active North American athlete, you know, to come out as gay. And I thought the funny thing is I'm going to talk about it on the show, but I don't know really much to say. It came out. It kind of was met with universal approval. There's going to be like 3-5% of the homophobic people out there that'll find a reason to be upset or think this won't work. But I don't think you're going to hear anyone publicly say anything because they know that they're wrong and, you know, they'll get shouted down as they should. And I think the one difference is I think 20 years ago, there'd be the one rogue unnamed player saying, I don't know if I'd be comfortable with him in the locker room or in the shower. And I think we're past that. I think we're past that point now because, I mean, A, what a stupid concept. But I like to me, the great thing is the story got headlines and then it kind of went away.
Well, that's ultimately progress. And he himself said in the video that ideally these kinds of videos won't be necessary in the future. But for now, they are. I disagree with you about the number of the 3-5%. I think the 3-5% of the people who are loud enough to say something and take it on their shoulders to be ignorant in public. I think there's a lot of people who believe that kind of stuff quietly and not necessarily militantly, but they, you know, there are preferences and prejudices that I think are buried under the surface, especially in Canadian culture, because we can bury just about anything here and pretend we don't think what we really do. But when you look at numbers like who supports gay marriage and who's anti-gay marriage across the country, those numbers are way higher than you would think in terms of people who don't believe gay people have the right to be married because they're gay and a marriage is a man and a woman. You know, like there's just a lot of bullshit out there. And so that's why I think this kind of stuff is really important. And what was really, I found impressive, I don't know how much money this guy makes, but he was donating $100,000 to a charity that stands, you know, works with LGBTQ kids to suicide prevention, because those numbers are shockingly and terrifyingly high. So, you know, I'm always torn between this kind of stuff because you don't want to validate the 3-5% who actually say something. Mm-hmm. But it's also very hard to call out the quiet, not so minority who just don't say what they really think, because it comes across as virtue signaling or, as you say, wokeness, when in actual fact, it's just like No, you fuckers are out there and you know it. And you just won't say anything because it's easier to blame progressives to say, oh, you know, you just make a big deal out of everything.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's true or not. Yeah.
The only thing I'll say, because the problem in life, and this is in all societies, not a North American thing, this is just a human thing. There's always going to be percentage. The key is to keep whittling down that percentage of people that are not going to be accepting. And for those fuck faces, hopefully, you know, you have those quiet, stupid thoughts to yourself, and then you move on with your pathetic lives.
I don't know how good this player is. I hope he's good. I hope he has a great year. Collins. Sorry,
he's been he's been a productive starter. He always starts, you know, the 14, 16 games. Like he is a productive starter wherever he's been. He's not a star, but he's going to be there. He's going to be there week one on the first snap.
Jason Collins came out and he was the first NBA player to do so, but he was a marginal player.
Yeah.
And so even though the story was covered, it didn't have legs because he didn't stick in the league.
Yeah.
This might be different. I don't know.
He's a middle class player that gets that starts.
All right. Anything else? Well, you got to get going pretty soon.
Yeah.
One quick thing.
Yes.
Did you get a chance to see the second episode of Loki?
Oh, no, Bob. I'm hoarding my candy. I'm hoarding my candy, buddy. I'm trying to avoid watching it until the end of the playoffs, because I got enough entertainment to satiate me. And the moment the Stanley Cup and the NBA championship are done, I'm going to dive into all of it.
Yeah, but then we can't discuss it on the pod.
Well, we will eventually be able to discuss it.
Yeah, but no, everyone's going to be done with it by then. Like, cause this can't be I discovered the Arcade Fire in 2012. Check out this new band. Come on. Yeah, but you owe it to people to watch this so we can discuss it.
If it took you 8 years to discover Arcade Fire, that's on you. But Bob, I'm doing the opposite of what I did as a 9-year-old at Halloween, where I'd eat most of my candy before the end of the night. This time I'm saving all the Kit Kats and Smarties.
No, you have to go full Uta and eat that chocolate. Dive in.
I'm so filled with chocolate.
Come on, that looks like you. If we got you a little bit of Lederhosen, you would look just like Uta.
So filled with chocolate.
Oh, man. Like just smudges, chocolate smudges all over your cheeks. Okay, one more Kyrie slam poem before we go. You ready?
I got mine. Are you ready with yours?
Yeah. I'm just going to make one up off the top of my head. Sneakers. Where am I sneaking to? Where do I need to hide? Who am I? Who am I that I need to hide? Go.
You mentioned chocolate. Well, chocolate is also late, as in the last four letters is late. And this podcast is late. And we need to elevate. And we have got to. Ah, damn it. I ran out of steam. Goodbye, Bob. Ch-ch-ca.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.